Good day, everyone. Welcome to the CSU Relentless Gardener Podcast. I am Colorado State University Horticultural Specialist Linda Langelo, and joining me today is Lou Ann Aiken, Garden Ambassador of Tagawa Gardens. Now let's get to the heart of it, where we explore the horticultural topic of herbs. Hello, Lou Ann.
Good day to you, my friend. Good day.
Same to you. Glad you could be here. So let's
happy to be here.
Good, great. So let's tell the listening audience. There's some herbs that like it dry, and there's some herbs that like it moist. Which ones like it dry?
Well, the herbs that we grow come in most cases from the Mediterranean area. And you have there some really rich soil from the volcanic activity, and you have some fairly gritty soil from the volcanic activity. So the herbs kind of cross the gamut of those that prefer something a little more dry. And as examples, that would be rosemary, lavender, sage, thyme, and oregano. And on the more moist side, and that doesn't mean soggy, none of this will take it soggy, but herbs that like it just a little more moist with a little more organic matter would include herbs like basil and chives, cilantro, dill, parsley, and mint. So it's not a hard line. Some of those more moisture-loving ones can take it a little bit drier. But generally speaking, the ones that like it dry are going to really like it pretty well dry for the duration of their growth.
And things like lavender prefer sand. Grow in sand
or very I have grown lavender in the clay soil in what used to be a horse workout arena, but I just made sure that I watered appropriately. I loosened the soil. I've never added anything to my native soil here, but I live in kind of the rolling hills of eastern Douglas County, so it's clay, but it's also a lot of grit in it as well, so I don't have any problems growing lavender.
As long as it's well drained, that's really a key.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. And, you know, herbs are so easy to grow in Colorado in most cases. They are not divas in any way that I have come across. I'm a foodie in the sense that I love food, but I'm not a foodie in the sense that I like to make it. So I love the impact of herbs has on my meals. So I grow herbs and happily giving them away to other people who perhaps will cook for me. But they're so easy to grow, so they really are a great topic. I'm glad we're doing this today.
Yes. So talk a little bit about the soil prep.
Okay, we have talked about the fact that none of them want it soggy. They will not. That's the way it is with most plants. There are very few plants that you would say, you know, bog plants like it pretty much constantly wet, but nothing else wants to be constantly in soggy soil. So for those herbs that love it more on the dry side, they're going to need soil that is either has some natural grit to it, or that is well loosened, well worked in terms of not disturbing it so much, like with necessarily a big rototiller, but really digging and opening it up a little bit and trying to get some air pockets in there. Of course, never ever working the soil when it's wet, because that really will compact it. So on the dry side, again, like rosemary, lavender, sage, those were really going to thrive in soils that will take up the water and then drain it on quickly. For the moisture loving side, and it's not the wet loving, it's just the more moisture loving side of the herbs, again, the basil, chives, cilantro, those are going to definitely want it a little more moist, definitely still well draining, but they have more organic matter for those herbs to really pull some higher level nutrients out of there. And for those, especially if you're growing in containers, you really can control the amount of soil, the character of the soil. For the moisture loving herbs, we pretty much say in a container, because it's the easiest way to control is in a container or a raised bed. For those, you're going to want to put 2/3 potting soil and 1/3 something like cactus mix to ensure that steady drainage. For the more moist, the drier side herbs, you're going to do half and half, good quality potting soil in a container and good cactus mix to get in there. Some people come up with grit from that are used in farm settings. But half and half potting soil, something drainable like cactus mix for the dry side, 2/3 potting soil, 1/3 cactus mix or some other gritty component for the more moisture loving side.
You touched on the nutrients in the soil. So in your opinion, do herbs need extra fertilization?
Generally not. A lot of times the research has shown that if you fertilize an herb, you tend to in some way diminish the value or the potency of the oils that give us the flavor. If you did really feel like you needed to, some gardeners are just compulsively feel like I need to feed this plant. I would go something with a low level fertilizer, fish fertilizer, only a couple of times a year, maybe. But again, unless they're showing really significant nutrient deficiencies in the color of their foliage or in just their general productivity, I would avoid fertilizing them at all unless you really have a sense that they are asking you to do that.
Right, right. And I think of herbs as plants that you should neglect a little bit. You know, not
and
not totally.
That's really good.
Not totally.
Yeah, not totally. Not totally. But this, again, goes back to what we were saying about herbs really are pretty easy to grow here in Colorado. People could grow them in beds in the ground. They can grow them in raised beds, which are becoming increasingly popular as fewer folks want to get down on their hands and knees. Right. You can also grow them in containers, which is my absolute favorite. And some of them will adapt to growing indoors. But in all cases, you want to do the best you can to address that nature of the soil that they will need to ensure that good drainage.
I always worry about with raised beds, they heat up sooner, they dry out faster. And then, you know, you have to go in the peak of the summer and late summer and make sure that they have adequate water. And that's, you know, where I worry about folks, you know, doing the overwatering.
Because you think they are not watering enough because they're out of the ground as a raised bed?
No, that they add too much. Like they water in the morning or they water at night, and then they have to come back midday, turn on the soaker hose or something.
Okay.
And then it's just, you know, that they've gone overboard and it's a delicate balance, you know.
Right. And you know, I think once people get used to and I don't grow in raised beds, my herbs are all in containers. But I think if you use a moisture meter and you get a pretty good sense of what your normal watering schedule and what those plants want and the nature of the soil that they're growing in, again, I think there's a way to judge how much moisture is there and really not overthink it too much, with the exception of some of the really moisture loving herbs, the basils, the chives, parsley, although parsley I think you can't kill, and mint. We should talk about mint. There are ways to get a sense of what the plants are doing. One of my favorite new tricks is to take something like a skewer or a chopstick and stick it down in the ground and leave it for a few minutes. You pull it up and you can see very clearly how much is dry and how much is wet, you know, for the top 6-8 inches of soil. So the moisture meters, Tagawas, are very reasonably priced. Everybody has access to a chopstick, assuming you like, you know, Asian food. But so there is some investigative work to be done. So don't water when you have the information, right? When you know that it needs it, and don't just do it out of habit.
Right, right. But of course, if the plant's wilting, then water.
Yeah, yeah. They're talking to you, aren't they? They're talking to you. Absolutely.
But a skewer is a great idea. That's wonderful. That's just, yeah, I think that's cool.
You can keep them in every bed, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. So let's talk about sun and shade settings for each group.
For the dry side, the ones with the rosemaries, lavenders, and such, they can take full sun, full-on sun. Rosemary can be a little bit sensitive to drying winds, but I grow my rosemary in a container, and it takes surprisingly cold temperatures. And I found, too, just as a side note, that if I keep it in an unheated mudroom over the winter, most of the time, if it gets down to 20 degrees or so, that actually makes it flower better. And we also should talk about flowers. There's so much about herbs to talk about. So the drier side, loving herbs, full sun, no problem. The more moisture inclined herbs, morning sun is ideal. Afternoon sun, some of them can absolutely take it. The parsleys and the mints, they just pretty much laugh that full sun, but they will do fine in part shade. So that's why I was trying to encourage people. These are fine. If you don't have full sun, there's still plenty of things you can grow, basil being one of them.
So let's go back to flowers before we forget.
Flowers. The thinking is that if you let an herb not only go to seed, but go to flower, that part of the plant's energy that's creating the flower and the subsequent seed is stealing from the side that's creating your nice aromatics and your oils and things for the purpose that most of us want the herbs for. At the same time, and I totally get that if you're really hardcore culinary growing, then you should absolutely cut the flowers off. Although I'm growing some African bluebush basil and the flowers, the little tiny lavender flowers are delicious. Sprinkle on a salad. So the other thing about flowering, the pollinators absolutely love herb flowers. They love it. So I have been known to keep the flowers on my basil going just to please the honeybees, because they just think it's like the best thing ever. So maybe you leave some, take others. Maybe you have crops where you always take the seed. If you're growing dill, clearly you want to leave the seed because that's part of the purpose of growing the dill in the first place. But you just have to make a decision based on your priorities. Should you leave the flowers for the beauty? And thyme has beautiful flowers, adorable flowers. There are two kinds of thyme that some are in the ground and they're not meant to be culinary, and then the others that you grow for culinary purposes. Maybe you take the flowers off of the culinary herbs, and absolutely, by all means, leave the flowers on the ground-dwelling, ground-cover type herbs, and you're not defeating, you're not losing anything there. So you just have to decide how you want to approach it. You want to take all the flowers off, leave some, leave none,
right?
Up to you.
Right, and today, one of the more popular topics is companion planting. And so interplanting an herb that gets along with the crop that it's next to can bring in those pollinators, increase yields, improve the soil, sometimes improve the flavor of the crop, and also deter pests. So you can have culinary herbs in a different place, use some of those herbs interplanted, and you're just going to have a huge diversified ecosystem in your vegetable garden.
I completely agree. I'm a big fan of interplanting. Even veggies, herbs, other things in your perennial garden, as long as the ecosystem, the soil, the moisture, that whole thing is compatible. But I'm also a fan, leaning very much toward container gardening, for herbs, of putting a nice, beautiful container out in the middle of your perennial bed and having that just be a whole change of pace, adding different kinds of personality to it. So there are just so many ways to be an herb gardener, and they don't have to be difficult. A little bit of you know, study and research online. Allison O'Connor of CSU has an amazingly good herb and harvesting video on YouTube. So I'm sure people can find that as well. It's about an hour and a half long, lots of great information, and the information is definitely out there. So don't be shy, do a little homework and make sure that you kind of get the job done before you even select whether you're planting by seed, by plant, by start, whatever works for you. But just a little bit of research will get you a long way.
Yes, Allison O'Connor is a CSU horticultural specialist in Larimer County, and she does a great job. And so if you just look up on YouTube CSU Allison O'Connor, they should be able to find the YouTube. And so one point about one herb that came to mind is fennel. And fennel is got to be away from a lot of things in your garden, because it sends out a chemical that will stunt the growth and inhibit germination of seeds. So unfortunately, if you like to grow fennel, it has to be by itself. And sunflowers, which are not necessarily an herb, can definitely stop germination and stunt growth of plants nearby.
That's great to know, and I didn't realize that about fennel. How far away would you suggest they plant it from any other or plant that it might affect?
I would say a couple feet, you know, in its own space.
Oh, okay. That's not so much.
No.
That's not a big ask. Okay.
No. Okay. Not.
I have heard that you don't want to.
Not like 6 inches or butt it near right up against something else. Yeah.
Okay. It's a pretty plant. It's a beautiful plant.
Yeah. Fennel. And I don't think
the foliage.
I don't think most people know how to use it or what to use it for, but it's one of the lesser known plants, I think.
Absolutely.
In the garden. Anyway.
You know, another herb that I like, speaking of slightly lesser known, and I don't use it, I don't grow it to eat it. I put it in maybe strawberry pots or mixed herb containers, and that's sorrel, red veined sorrel. It's so beautiful. It's like a beautiful spinach leaf with these deep red, distinctly red veins going through it. And if you wanted to make a mixed container of herbs that had similar needs and the preferences, put some of that. It's called bloody dock or red vein sorrel. It's a beautiful plant. They say the young leaves taste like spinach, but you'd have to have a lot of of the plant to actually make a meal out of it. So just plant it, let it be pretty. You could put it in with your flower containers for an accent. It's really a lovely, lovely herb.
And I think you pointed on a important key that, you know, planting the herbs that like the same conditions should be together. And that's much the same with companion planting. So, you know, it's one and the same. It will really benefit the efficiency of how you garden.
And when you think about it, that's how we plant pretty much everything. You don't want to plant your thirsty rose or peony, you know, next to a big patch of lavender, because they aren't, somebody's going to suffer.
Well,
so with yeah. anything that you plant, make sure you see it as kind of a broader bed of similar needs.
Yeah. And then, you know, looking at the habit and the structure of rosemary versus the broad leaves of a rose can tell you a lot about how they would like to be treated. You know, all the, like sage, a silver leaf plant, it's going to be able to take the hot weather, reflect the light back. It has lots of hairs on the leaves. The characteristics of that plant and the origin of that plant count for a lot.
You have to go back to where Mother Nature had them originally. You have to go back to their native setting. And that's not that hard to find. I didn't realize until I was doing some research yesterday that it's not just a lot of our herbs, but a whole bunch of them, like most of the herbs that are most popular for culinary purposes in this country, come from that Mediterranean area.
Right.
They have two different types of soil, the gritty and the more volcanic, you know, organic, humusy soil. It's so very easy to do as long as you do just a little bit of homework first. That should be the case with most anything we plant.
Right. Or stop in at Tagawa Gardens and ask, right?
We would love that. We would so love that. We're proud. I was done a couple of herb presentations as part of my outreach duties at Tagawa's. And I counted, I think we had like 18 different kinds of basil, you know, so not to do a commercial for Tagawa's, but boy, there is so much out there to choose from and learn from and experiment with. It's lovely stuff.
Exactly. So which herbs are annual and which are perennial?
Most of your moisture loving herbs definitely will not survive outside. You know, the basil, the cilantro, the ones that seem just a little more delicate by nature. The ones that can survive outside are some of the sages, some of the thymes. Rosemary, ARP, rosemary, zone 6, so it's a little dicey in some areas, but I have heard people who will keep it going in a protected spot where it doesn't get dumped on by snow and it's out of the wind. Again, I had my rosemary growing in a really nice pot. I loved it because it looked like it had been excavated from one of the volcanic cities, Pompeii or something. It just suited it, and I put it in a cold, unheated mudroom that got lots of light, and it survived down to 20 degrees.
Wow!
So that doesn't make a windowsill, but there are ways to carry that rosemary over.
Right.
Some of the indoor windowsill friendly herbs. We haven't talked about the Spanish and French lavenders. They are beautiful. They have great fragrance. They're totally an annual here. And they will grow nicely on a windowsill. Plus mint, parsley, chives, maybe basil. If he doesn't get too leggy, you have to add the light for it though.
And if they keep them, the annual herbs over winter inside, we should probably remind people that they need to be acclimated in their new location before, you know, you just don't yank them from inside to outside.
Yeah, exactly. At Sagawa's, we're always trying to emphasize the fact that the indoors, or whether it's in a greenhouse or even a home, that's really easy on the plants if they have enough light, they're being cared for properly. But you don't have any wind, you don't have any massive fluctuation of temperatures, the humidity stays pretty much the same. It's like if you are going to go to the beach and you haven't been doing any outside work at all, and you go and lay on the sand and you fry, right? Well, the plants do the plant version of that. So you go about it slowly. And some people say 2 or 3 days. I'd rather do that hardening off or acclimating process over 4 or 5 days. So you put them outside, maybe in a very protected area, bring them in at night. Put them outside in a little more exposed area, bring them inside. Put them outside in a more exposed area, bring them up next to the house. So just in phases, they're in boot camp, they're in training camp. And over the course of 4 or 5 days, you introduce them to their new reality, whether they like it or not. But it can make a huge difference. We see plants come into the garden center and we say, you know, we ask them, we try to figure out what went wrong. And we ask them about hardening off or acclimating, failing to harden them off or acclimate them. Won't necessarily kill them, although it can, but it will almost certainly stunt them a lot. And you may not have the plant that you really hoped you were going to have.
Well, it's like when we have temperature extremes that go from like 85 degrees to 15, we'll say, and it does it within less than, you know, 12 hours. And there are no plants, no trees, no shrubs that can acclimate that quickly. And so their internal vascular structure will have some damage.
Right. And not so much an herb, but we have seen exactly that on a lot of the conifers over the past few years, where they went from like 80 degrees to, I don't know, 22 or something. The trees can take that 22 degrees, but not in a 12-hour, 24-hour period.
No.
There's so much about herbs that really just apply to plants in general. And that's why anybody who's not inclined to grow herbs, if you grow plants at all, try some herbs. I'm on my herbal soapbox. But just start out with what you like. And it's just, it can be really rewarding. It's really lovely.
Well, and just adding them to the garden, the scent alone on some of them repel pests.
Right.
I mean, that would be a great benefit, especially if you're the type of person that doesn't want to use, even insecticidal soap in your garden, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, and again, because the pollinators just love these things, and they all, as a bonus, if it helps people decide, most herbs, in fact, I can't think of too many that aren't, but most herbs are deer and rabbit repellent. I mean, they don't want it because they're browsing with their nose first. And when they have that strong smell, or as you say, with the sunflowers, that hairy texture, they'll go find something they like much better. Now, I always say that deer will eat anything if they're hungry enough, but I've never had them eat my herbs.
Yep, exactly. You're exactly right. So tell the folks some tips on harvesting, do's and don'ts.
Do's and don'ts. Don't harvest this leaf and that leaf. Harvest the whole stem and harvest from all over the plant to maintain a balance in the shape of the plant, so you're not harvesting half of a plant and the other half is still looking really funky. They say that the best way to approach it is harvest up to 1/3 of the entire foliage, up to 1/3 of the entire foliage at each harvest. And then, of course, at the end of the season, you're going to take the whole thing, assuming it's not winter hardy here. That's different. You kind of take the whole thing. Maybe you try to get some sprigs to start. Either, I guess you could do it in water or perlite or something that's not going to be too soggy, and to turn it into an indoor windowsill or or grow light type plant, but one third, no more than one third, and harvest from all over, and not just the leaves, but the entire stem, so the plant can really recover and maintain some decent shape.
Great advice. Great advice.
Thank you.
Do you have any suggestions of different varieties other than the ones that are the most common that we use?
I keep going back to basil because anytime I do an herb presentation for Tagawas, I take a quick poll, and basil always wins as the most popular. But you don't have to be growing just the basic, you know, Italian pesto form of basil. I referenced that African bluebush basil. I plant that outside, just outside the slider door from my house to the deck. And every time my dogs come by, they get this wonderful fragrance of basil, and they kind of carry it into the house. So there are different ways to use it. There are tiny, tiny basils, which would be especially good. Like the one's called Pluto. I assume it's taken that name from the tininess of what used to be the Pluto planet. But there are cinnamon basils. There are Thai holy basils. There are so many different kinds of basils. We have a really pretty variegated basil called Pesto Perfecto. So within a group, find what you like, but there's every chance that within that general variety of herb, there are other options still to be chosen. You can do different things. Thyme comes in an amazing variety. Mint, oh, we should get a quick word in about mint. Mint will take over the planet if you're a let it. So every time they put out runners, and every time you have two little leaves come together, there's a root system just waiting to grow. So if you grow mint, which also can be grown as a very good windowsill herb because they're tough as nails, you want to make sure that none of that foliage ever touches the ground. If it does, it will take off, and it's really hard to get rid of. But I think of that because mint has an amazing amount of varieties, chocolate mint and pineapple mint. There's all kinds of wonderful mints out there to choose from. So go with some of your favorites, but maybe don't grow the most obvious one. And you really can have a lot of fun with that.
Well, and using mint in iced tea, you know, makes it a whole different flavor.
I've heard of people chopping up chocolate mint and putting it on their vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many different kinds of these plants within the basic, what you think of. So yeah, explore a little, push yourself a little. And what have you got to lose? You know, what have you got to lose?
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Exactly.
What else is there about herbs that your sweet self would like to talk about?
The one thing that I want to put out there, because I keep pushing the herbs in containers, partly because A, containers are mobile. And if you find that, you know, you haven't given it quite enough light, you can generally address that. But I really, when you look up pictures of herbs on the internet, they show you these nice little, you know, something about the size of a Slurpee cup. It's growing an herb. It's like, no, please don't plant herbs, especially the sun-loving herbs, in anything smaller. And this is an arbitrary number I've picked out, about an 8-inch pot, minimum, absolute minimum. There, if you have work, if you have a busy life, most people do, you're going to be watering that twice a day without fail, because that isn't enough soil in that pot to insulate the roots from the heat. So even if it has enough water, you could still be baking the roots. So I would rather see 8-inch and larger for anybody who's growing in a container outdoors.
Well, and then when you have a confined container and you're growing an herb like that, think of the oxygen that it's not getting and the nutrients that it's not getting. And that's comes back on the quality of the herb.
Yeah. And so I understand space can be limited for people who are downsizing, or people who are living in apartments. Maybe they have great light, but they don't have great bed options. But just be careful with the size of your container and the nature of your container. Herbs look great in those terracotta pots. They look absolutely wonderful. And the dry side herbs especially love those because they breathe so well. It's really almost impossible to overwater them as long as you have drainage, which every container needs to have. No exceptions, drainage. But that beautiful clay pot is going to, again, need water at least every day in the heat of summer. So think about, there's some really nice looking resin pots out now that you would swear from a distance were a really pretty clay pot or a pretty ceramic pot. So just think about the nature of the container, what the container is made out of, and then see if that suits the setting and your lifestyle of where you want to grow those herbs. That can be a real, like, we love to see people succeed. And that 8-inch minimum is part of the, we want you to succeed. Look at the nature of the container you're using. That's part of what's wanting to, you know, people to succeed. So again, it does keep going back to just a little bit of homework and go a long way caring for herbs and pretty much every plant you have.
You're absolutely right. And the other benefit of containers is, well, you know, taking them in the winter and then hail. If we have hail and you happen to be home and you're there in time, you can move them in the garage.
Right, right. Big containers when they're wet from having been watered or plant growth, and the big root systems can be a little heavier. You have rolling plant caddies, if that's helpful. I will let you in on a very unsophisticated but fairly effective routine that my husband and I have adopted. So I have big containers with flowers and some with herbs. I take a big 4-foot piece of rebar. Hello, Dooley. He's joining us here. A 4-foot piece of rebar, that heavy metal rod that you see, steel rod that you see at construction sites, poke it down in the middle of my container, damage very few roots. I take some pre-cut landscape fabric, wrap it around, so now it looks like a teepee, a few bulldog clips, and you're good. Now, the catch is you got to be home. You got to anticipate it. So there have been times when my husband and I were both going to be gone. If it wasn't too hot, we would go ahead and do that before we left. It takes a little work, but man, it goes a long way toward protecting plants, including herbs.
I thought you were going to say you had some device where you could put it on something that your dogs could pull.
The dogs are good. That's why I grow a whole lot of stuff in containers. When you have 4 dogs, that's 16 feet, and there's too much that can happen bad down at ground level. But it really is an effective way to kind of beat back even hard, heavy rain, you know.
Yes. Yeah,
because some of these herbs are not going to bounce back from a hailstorm.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Luann, for joining me.
You are so welcome. I appreciate the interest, and I'm always happy to be your guest.
And we'll have to think of another topic for next time.
We'll do it.
A thank you to the listening audience. Tune in next time when we get to the heart of the matter on another horticultural topic.